What's up, everyone, and welcome to Mound Talk Podcast. This podcast is created by a college pitcher to interview professional pitchers, both current and former. In this podcast, we dive into their experience becoming a pro and their journey. Joining me on this episode of Mound Talk Podcast is Kansas City Royals minor league pitcher, Will Klein. Will played college baseball at Eastern Illinois University and was drafted by the Royals in the fifth round of the 2020 COVID-shortened draft. In this podcast, we talked about having his season cut right after it started, starting his pro career during a pandemic, and how his life has changed so far being a pro baseball player. Let's go ahead and get into it. I'm here with Will Klein, who was drafted by the Royals this year. So, Will, go ahead and tell us about yourself.
So, Will Klein. I'm from Bloomington, Indiana. Went to Bloomington North High School. Didn't get a whole lot of looks. Ended up going to Eastern Illinois University, which is a small D1 school in Charleston, Illinois. Spent 3 years there under Jason Anderson. And then just last year, after COVID shut everything down, Royals gave me a shot. And so took me in the fifth round, and that's about where we are now.
All right. So I had that you went to Eastern Illinois. What part of that, you know, did the draft become in the picture?
I kind of knew going into sophomore year that if that was my goal, I needed to pick it up a little bit because I knew I had some interest. Like, I had a few people like watch me. So going into that sophomore, like spring, I knew I needed to kind of kick into gear, like throw a little harder, throw more consistent, get more innings and stuff. And so I had a few outings that I showed I could pitch a little at the next level. And then kind of that summer is where I hit my stride and really showed I had a chance of getting drafted.
And that was in that summer you were mentioning is in the Northwoods League, right?
Yep, Lakeshore Chinooks up in Mequon, Wisconsin.
How was that?
That was awesome. I had a great host family up there, the Joneses. Mequon is like a great little area just north of Milwaukee. And the stadium was at Concordia, Wisconsin. Yeah. It was like an all turf field, like right off Lake Michigan.
Oh, wow.
Had a breeze. Yeah. It didn't get really over 75. The turf kept it warm, even if it was like a 60-degree game. And so it was perfect. I know a lot of guys don't like Northwoods, but if you can't get used to that traveling, then minor league baseball is probably not going to be for you either. And so I just took it with a grain of salt, and I really enjoyed my time up there.
So for those that don't know, do you mind like explaining a little bit about the Northwoods League and just like kind of how your experience itself was?
Can you repeat that? You kind of cut out there.
Yeah. So for those that don't know how the Northwoods League is and like, you know, the details of it, and then a little bit about your experience, do you mind explaining those?
Yeah, so Northwoods is like, it's a step under whatever the league up in New England
is. Oh, the Cape Cod.
Cape League. And so it's kind of the one right before that, where a lot of good sophomore, junior, mid-major level players, JUCO guys, kind of that could be in the Cape, but like haven't had that kind of exposure, that oh my god, didn't work. That level of pitching yet. And so I thought the talent there could have been equal to the Cape, but it was fun. There were four subdivisions, two divisions. So they kind of cut the traveling down by making those subdivisions, but still we had it was a schedule for like a game every day. We had like a few, like four or five off days sprinkled in the entire summer. Yeah, and you spent a lot of the hours of the day at the ballpark, so you didn't really have a lot of free time. It was like we had like one off day every other week or so, but it was fun. Like if you enjoy playing baseball, you're out there playing baseball like 8 hours every day. And so I had a blast. And honestly, our travel wasn't that bad. Our farthest trip was up northern Michigan, maybe in Traverse City.
Just a couple of hours.
Maybe like 8 hours or so. And so it wasn't even that bad. They had a cool little stadium area, but other than that, they're like 4-5 hour trips at the most. So it wasn't terrible.
That's still pretty big for summer ball.
Yeah.
And I heard at that league, is that the first time you hit 100?
Yeah. The first time was at the All-Star game. It was my last outing.
Oh, wow.
Before I got shut down. So I was like, might as well try to throw as hard as I can here, 'cause I'm not pitching the rest of the summer. And so
what was that like?
It was pretty cool. I'd been like 96, 98 most of the summer. I know I hit like a 9 every once in a while, but I didn't really, I wanted to, like that was the goal, but I didn't really like going expecting that I'm going to go hit 100. Like that was like the dream, like, for my entire career was to get there. And then I go in, I see, I turn around after my first pitch and it says 99. I'm like, wow, I didn't feel like that was everything. And so I got it. I heard people start cheering. I turn around and just shows 2-0 on the scoreboard because it couldn't fit triple digits. And I was like, that's pretty cool. And I just kept
pitching. That's crazy.
Yeah.
What was it like? I mean, like, you know, did you get a lot of like jokes from your teammates that you finally hit it or anything like that?
Yeah, a lot of the guys I played for with Lakeshore were joking about how I should have hit it a long time ago, stuff like that. I get stuff now saying, oh man, you don't need to do anything now. You already threw 100, just stuff like that.
So you go back for to Eastern Illinois for your senior or junior year, sorry. What was that kind of like, you know, knowing you just had a great performance in the Northwoods League, you just hit 100, you know, how was the senior year?
It was good. I went in knowing that I didn't have a big enough body of work to work myself where I thought I needed to, where I thought I deserved to be drafted in those top five rounds. Even going in before we knew it was only five rounds, I knew I had the talent level to get there, but I also knew that I didn't have like consistent numbers or even like good enough numbers at all at the like NCAA level instead of just summer ball, because I hadn't thrown a lot my first two seasons, but I knew it. I knew I needed to transform myself into a starter to get the most innings, most kind of time out there as I could to show everyone what I could do. And then I earned that Friday start against Arkansas, and I kind of went out there and showed them what I had in my bag. And so, and then, I mean, I had four starts that spring before we got shut down, but I did enough to get in those top five rounds.
So you mentioned that you were kind of underlooked in high school. You know, what do you think kind of separated from that to now, like, you're a junior throwing 100? What kind of like went in between?
So in high school, I wasn't really a pitcher. I caught. I was catcher freshman through junior year, pretty much. I was varsity catcher sophomore, junior year, for the most part. And then I knew, like, I liked pitching more. My mom was always like, you're catching for your high school. You got to focus on catching as well as pitching, even though I kind of sucked at hitting. And I was a decent catcher, but I really wanted to pitch. I knew I threw hard, and that's what I liked doing. And so I went out there. I threw well enough to get looks from Eastern Illinois. And then I liked everyone there, Jason Anderson, Julio Godinez, Kurt Corwright, Blake Beamer, all those guys. And so they gave me a chance, took what I could with them, and then started working with Anderson, Godinez, and then transforming myself into like an actual pitcher, like not just a guy that throws kind of hard, but a guy that can throw a curveball, throw it where he wants, like understands like the smaller parts of the game and stuff. And so that's where that kind of turned me around, and using my whole body and not being just like a newborn giraffe.
Yeah. So it wasn't necessarily that you like didn't get enough looks. It was just, you didn't start pitching until late.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't like that consistent. It wasn't like I just said, I didn't have control over like the finer mechanics. Like, I just kind of grew, or was a bigger dude that didn't really know how to use my whole body.
So, you know, back to junior year, you get shut down. At that point of getting shut down, did you probably know like you weren't going to go back to school? You were going to get drafted or at least signed as a free agent after that?
It was kind of up in the air because no one really knew how many rounds it was going to be. Everyone's like, they're going to cut to like 5 or 10. But like, I didn't know if I'd put in enough, like, or good enough numbers to like sneak into the top five after kind of a mediocre first 2 years. And so it was just like, everyone is saying like anywhere from 4 to 6. And so I knew it was like a fringe, like fifth round guy, but I'm a pretty big academic guy. And so I knew if I didn't get drafted, I probably wasn't going to be signing one of those free agent deals, and I was probably going to go back for a second junior year and just finish out my degree.
Yeah, that's awesome. So talk me through, I guess, the week leading up to the draft or whenever kind of things started to pick up for it.
Yeah, it got pretty crazy. 2-3 weeks before, I had a lot of calls, a lot of Zooms with like pitching coordinators, kind of higher up guys. And so but overall, like the Royals were calling me, talking to me the most. Like I kind of had a feel it was them, or a few other teams were like kind of nipping at their heels, but they definitely talked to me the most. But I mean, communication was every day or every other day at the most. And then when it got to draft Like, I knew I wasn't first round guy. I mean, that's been set since like before the season even started for our draft, at least with all those guys. But going into day two, I was like talking to my agent, like, hey, what's the feel? Like, and he was just listening, like, you got a few teams interested here. You got a few guys might be calling you like the late fourth, early fifth. And so just sitting on my couch, just kind of shaking my boots, waiting for that call.
So you mentioned your agent. When did your agent kind of like come into the picture? When did you find him? Like, were you looking at multiple agents at a time?
So I started getting calls when I performed, had a good few outings up in the Northwoods. Like, they started like either getting in contact with the coach or like finding me on Twitter or something like that. And so I started like talking to them, like putting in phone calls. Like, I had a few come to games, like meet with them face to face. And before all that, they're called advisors. You can't really, you're not allowed to have like an actual agent or stuff beforehand. But I had calls, like meetings with all of them, and I narrowed it down to top three or five towards the end of my season, and then kind of narrowed it down to the guy I got after all that, because he stood head and shoulders above the rest. And so but that was like all the way up until about a week before school started or so.
Okay. And then, so, you know, your agent, what all did your agent have you, or I guess advisor at this time, did he have anything besides just like, hey, like, you know, pitch good and you'll get drafted? Did he have anything else like actual to like kind of help you with, you know, up until the draft?
He was kind of just give me like what the vibes were of certain teams, like how they felt or like how many calls he was fielding and stuff like that. Like, they weren't allowed to do a whole lot. Like, they're not it was kind of like complicated, like what they were and weren't allowed to do before they were like actually your agents and stuff.
Yeah. Cause so I know there is like fine rules with that, as in like, you know,
yeah,
I want to say it was like James Paxton a few years ago who like he had Scott Boras, and like there was a little bit of communication more than there should be like at the draft. And so he couldn't reach a deal with his team. I guess, I want to say the Blue Jays, I don't know who it was, but couldn't reach a deal. Yeah. And then he had to go play independent league. I mean, there was a first round guy going to play independent league instead of getting drafted. Just, he couldn't go back to college because of the agent talks. And
yeah,
I know it is crazy with the rules.
Most communication ended up going between like my coach and those guys, like setting up meetings, like talking about that. And he knew what I needed to do better and just all of that. But the agent was, or my advisor at the time, was really just there to like kind of be a mentor kind of, instead of versus like a whole lot of scouting stuff at that time.
And so I know the draft was like right in the middle of like the big shutdown to where you couldn't really have parties. Were you at least able to have a little bit of a gathering for the draft?
Yeah, I was at home with my parents, siblings, girlfriend, and then a few more family members. Like, it wasn't big, but we just kind of sat around our TV just watching. My dad was on his phone because it was ahead of the TV, just told me I didn't get drafted at certain spots. It's like, come on, dude. But it was nice, and had enough people there for me at least.
So how did you find out first? Was it TV, the phone, or like did you actually get a call?
So I think my agent texted me like, hey, this is like what they're willing to offer. Are you like gonna accept that? I was like, yeah. And he's like, okay, well, they'll be calling you in like 2 minutes. I was like, oh shit. I got a call, went upstairs, just probably one of the best moments of my life so far, went down, told my family members, and then a minute later it was on the TV, and I got all this snaps, texts from friends, teammates, coaches, everyone, just kind of that they saw it. And I was like, yeah, it just felt unreal at that point.
Was your phone pretty much frozen for the rest of the day?
I got so many like notifications just after that. Like, I didn't even know what to do with it. Like, I feel like I answered one and five more popped up at that time. It was ridiculous.
Yeah. That's pretty crazy. So, you know, with your, like, you know, you talk about how much you would take with your signing bonus. Did you have a financial advisor, or was that just kind of like tied to your agent?
Yeah. So the, my agent like suggested a financial advisor, and then I've been working with him. He's a really cool dude, but he helped me with all that. I put a lot of money away. I got like a car because my old one was about to explode on me, but it's about all I really did. And I got some new golf clubs, but other than that, most of it's been put away.
So I want to say, I mean, like, I know, you know, all of a sudden you got taxes, a little bit of agent fees. Now a financial advisor gets a little bit. And then, you know, whatever your signing bonus is, you only get like half that, maybe a third of that. So your agent kind of like your advisor kind of gave you like, here's a little bit of spending money. Now let's, you know, put away the rest.
Yeah. He was like, financial advisor kind of talked me through like what the plan was to put it in the stock market. And so we did that. And I've been happy with the job he's done managing all that. And then other than that, it's been just living expenses really.
And so do you still get to see like kind of like your portfolio, I guess? Like, do you get to check on
his fund? Yeah. I check it about daily or every other day or so. it's just fun to see it. And you know, like all the research that him and his like firm have put into like their just what they suggest daily stuff. And there's not a whole lot of changes going on. Like, he doesn't call me every day and like, oh, we need to sell and buy this. It's like maybe once a month, like he'll be like, we changed our ideas on this, or long term this looks better. But it's not, it's so not he like does, a daily.
He does still kind of like keep you involved in like, hey, like before we do this, even though we think it's best, check. That's awesome. He's like,
we changed my firm. We changed. We were on buy on this. Now we're on sell, and we're on buy. We were on sell on this one. Now we're on buy, and just stuff like that for certain stocks.
Hopefully, he didn't call you asking about GameStop or AMC, huh?
No, that would have been cool. He's like, yeah, we're gonna put it all into GameStop and just see what happens. No.
Yeah, but if he does that 2 days late, that's the problem.
Yeah, I saw a lot of people putting money in that, and I'm glad it worked out for all of them, but. My portfolio is just long term, just not touching it for 20 or so years.
That's smart.
See what happens. Yeah.
Were you at all into like investing before that?
I had a roommate who was very big into investing, like Robin Hood, stuff like that. He watched this guy every morning at 8:30 a.m. No, 8 a.m. or whatever, when the market opened in Central Time. This guy literally had a stream going from open to close, and so he'd watch him go to class, watch him go to practice, stuff like that.
That's crazy.
So I knew a little about it, but not what I'm doing now.
So now you're drafted. What I mean, because I think at the point of the draft, they knew there wasn't going to be a season, right? Or pretty much knew.
It was kind of up in the air. What was going to happen? The minor league season was canceled by then.
Yeah, like, that's what I meant. Like the minor league.
Yeah.
So what did the Royals, you know, kind of have to say, like, what do they want you to do?
They sent us like a throwing program, lifting program, because they still wanted to have something like for fall instructs. And so they were like trying to get us to arm conditioning level we needed to be at for that. And so they gave us like a monthly throwing program and then updated it every like few weeks or so. We do Zooms and stuff just to keep everyone in the loop. And so it was just all individual. Like if you kept up with it and you were in shape enough, but it was just throwing live ABs, bullpens, just not a whole lot of extra stuff going on, I guess.
So I'm guessing you just kind of like, you know, you film your bullpens or whatever so often, send them videos, they kind of update as they need.
Yeah, I think I threw bullpens Tuesdays, and we'd have pro hitters in for live ABs on Fridays. And so it was like a weekly thing, send in video, be like, thank you. All right, next week, send a video, like over and over.
Until and you had a pretty down. You had a pretty nice facility you were able to use, right?
Yeah, I'm up in Finch Creek Fieldhouse for PRP baseball in Noblesville. So it's a nice place to be.
And were they open pretty much most of, you know, the shutdown overall?
Yeah, I mean, Indiana hasn't been like too strict about everything. Like they've been following guidelines like masks and stuff, but working out wise, like it's spread out enough that they were able to keep it open and within guidelines. So it was nice to be able to go there.
That works perfect. So you mentioned your, you know, I guess fall instructs. Did you end up going to that?
Yeah, we went down September through November, I think.
And was that
September?
Arizona or KC?
Arizona, down in Surprise.
How was that?
It was hot. The first day we were out there was like 105, and I just didn't know what to do. Yeah, it wasn't the Midwest like humidity. It was just 105 and dry. It was tough to get used to, but it was nice. Got meet a lot of the guys in the Kansas City team, or not Kansas, but like the organization, the system. Mm-hmm. And then we played four games a week or so against Rangers, Padres, and Mariners. So it was nice to get to be able to play some competitive games again.
And was it pretty nice getting to finally like actually experience like, hey, I'm like a pro baseball player now?
Yeah, it was different taking that mindset from baseball or college baseball where you got school mm-hmm. to worry about while you're like worrying about games and stuff. And now it's just, wow, it's just baseball. And I have nothing else to do besides like lift, run, and throw for the Royals now. And so it was nice. I didn't have a lot more distractions going on.
So how does it feel baseball. Like you said, like now you don't have to like, you know, do your workout, do your throwing, do your lifting, and then go to class. How does it feel just like, you know, here's my 3-4 hours a day and then what's next?
Yeah, it's a lot easier, a lot simpler to like kind of keep track of because in college baseball, like, you know, you're trying to think about class and then, well, is this class going to make me practice? Well, then do I have to make a practice later? And then when am I going to do my homework? And then coach meeting or project group members like can't meet up because they got practice, like all that stuff. And now it's just, all right, come to the field. I have 4 hours here and then I go recover and repeat it tomorrow. Like no school, no nothing. Like I'll finish my last semester in the future. But like for now, it's just baseball. That's it. It's nice.
Do you find yourself kind of bored at the end of the day?
I mean, not really. Like we spend enough time at the field,
yeah,
down in Arizona, but when I'm just chilling here, I have work that takes me the rest of the day. And then if not, like that's I true. Play some video games. I got my girlfriend here, live in a nice little area. And so we find stuff to do.
And you mentioned golf. So I'm sure that can eat up the extra time.
But before it got to snowing and 20 degrees. Yeah. I was golfing a few times a week.
That's true. So, you know, you mentioned to me earlier, but so I guess from, you know, shutdown of summer to now you've just kind of like, you know, when you're not working out, you're just working at the facility, giving lessons.
Yep. That's about what we got. The guy I work for, Greg Vogt, runs high school and he's got high school group, middle school, youth guys. And so I'm just walking around the facility, like working guys through like what they're supposed to be doing, like helping and just stuff like that. So it's nice and easy.
So what do you think helped you, I guess, you know, besides you just mentioning like you actually learning how to pitch, how to move, yeah, you know, and all that, what do you think is something that helped you like kind of get ahead, you know, cause like not everyone, once they learn how to pitch, throws 100 or even upper 90s, lower 90s. What do you think helped you really just like give you that extra edge?
I think I'm one of the hardest workers I know. Not to like toot my own horn, but I'm like in the weight room, like you got a lot of guys in college that'll sandbag cause they don't want to like be too sore or anything. Cause they're afraid they're going to be sore to throw, like, or they're not like pushing it. And like, even in the classroom, like pushing themselves to be the best that they can. I try to do that with myself every day. Like throwing wise, I try to work on like throw my best curveballs, throw my best fastballs every day. And then like when we're throwing live, like I don't want the hitter to touch it at all. I'm just like, some guys I know, like ground ball pitchers, like you got those guys like that are supposed to be that's what they're really good at. But I'm just trying not to let that hitter touch it at all. Like I know if they put it in play every once in a while, but I'm just trying to like dominate everything I do. And just like mentality wise, like a lot of guys, like when they first get into college, they don't have that. And I know I didn't at first, but as soon as like I turned it on, like I knew what I needed to do. And I just went out and did it to the best I could.
So it sounds like instead of just like one super like, oh, like I did, you know, drive line, I started throwing plyo balls, weighted balls. It just seemed like.
I started doing that too.
Yeah. But so I'm guessing it just kind of seems like one of those, like that little extra detail, every single thing is what kind of helped build up to where you are.
Yeah. Like I level intensity when I'm doing my workout and stuff. Like I know, like that's the problem with like younger guys, like they don't know how to throw with intent and stuff like that. And so as soon as like I program that into my head, into my mentality, do everything with maximum intent, and then I kind of saw that I made a lot more progress than before.
Nutrition wise, was that something big in college or even in high school?
In high school, I didn't really think about that as like another part of throwing. And then even like we had a nutritionist, but it wasn't someone like that talked to us a lot, at least like my first 2 years or so. And like, I just lived in the dorms. And so freshman year, I was just eating whatever they had there. Like didn't really think a whole lot about it. Like, and I went in like, I was 220, but I was chubbier than I am now. Like I wasn't ripped. I wasn't like jacked. I was just pudgy, like freshman. And then sophomore year, I kind of turned it on. Like I knew what I needed to do. Like I knew I had potential. And so I kind of watched what I ate a little better, but it still wasn't like prime. Cause like you got the dorms and that's it. Like you can't really, we didn't have like a kitchen. And so I couldn't make my own food.
Oh, y'all didn't have like an oven. It was just, what, do you have a microwave? Maybe a mini fridge?
I had a microwave for noodles, but.
Oh geez.
Yeah. And a fridge for drinks and stuff. But other than that, we didn't have anything. But as soon as I got my own apartment, like cooking for myself, like I didn't know how to do that before. So I started making eggs, chicken, steak, all that stuff, like a lot more protein. And I noticed I started putting on a lot more pounds in the gym and stuff. And like, I was able to lift more and I was using like some of the chub and putting on like actual muscle. And so I did start noticing like a huge difference when I started eating better, which is something I should have thought of before, but it's just.
Yeah. What's your like go-to kind of like, I guess, meal prep meal?
I have different schedules every day. And I'm not meal prepping every day, but like I like steak and broccoli and rice. Like that's the big one, or chicken, like either that. But those are the go-tos. It's just nice and easy to make. It's easier to make a lot of it too. You know, you got minute rice, you throw it in there. Mm-hmm. Broccoli, just freezer bags in a
couple of seconds.
Steak,
yeah.
And chicken. Yeah, steak and chicken, just nice and easy to make.
So how are you on supplements? Do you take any, you know?
I have, I do protein, just whey protein powder. I have turmeric. It's instead of taking ibuprofen, I do turmeric. It's like a natural anti-inflammatory.
And is that that's a shot, right?
No, it's just a little pill of turmeric and some black pepper. Just, and then down in KC, we had multivitamins and like fish oil and stuff like that. But I haven't gotten any of that sent to me here yet. But down there, we were taking that creatine, and then I have certified for sport pre-workout that I take when I have like heavier volume days, but that's all I got. Nothing too crazy.
So what made you get on the turmeric instead of ibuprofen?
So I like ibuprofen, you know, it's just terrible for your liver. Like you're taking every day. Like everyone knows like those players that they rely on ibuprofen mm-hmm. to have their arm feel good, or they're just not doing enough and they're just relying on ibuprofen to not hurt. And so I had a buddy who's at the place I work out with now. He was like, turmeric and tart cherry juice for inflammation. And I was like, all right. So I started taking, I started like getting like less like painfully sore. And so I was like, oh, maybe this actually works. And so I'm just stuck with that for the most part. Every once in a while, like you'll be feeling bad. You're like, oh man, I need to leave or something. But mostly I'm just sticking with the turmeric and cherry juice.
So I guess they're both just kind of like a natural anti-inflammatory.
Yeah. I haven't looked into a whole bunch about how it works, but I know a lot of people are just looking for a natural like mm-hmm. substitute, go for turmeric.
Yeah. And that's a great idea. Cause I mean, like you said, like ibuprofen, like consistently can be pretty horrible for you, but like,
yeah,
you know, tart cherry juice and turmeric are, you know, common stuff that you could probably take yeah. for a span of time, feel better than ibuprofen, like a lot safer for your body than that.
Oh yeah.
And so you mentioned just, you know, basic pre-workout, you know, fish oil, you've taken creatine, nothing too crazy though.
Yeah. I just like stick with the basics. You know, everyone's got those guys out there that are looking for that extra supplement that like put them over. And like, creatine does wonders. Protein workout does wonders. Like all those additional like vitamins and stuff do wonders, but like none of them is going to give you extra 5 miles per hour like some guys are looking for. A lot of it's just in your own work, and so I'm not like pushing the limits of what I can take and stuff like that.
Do you have a certain protein powder you like, or is it just whatever there is?
I think it was the whey, like gold standard. Like I'm not looking for like a mass gainer or anything like that. It's just got a good amount of protein, and I get the I think it's chocolate or it's either chocolate or like cinnamon toast, and just mixes well with some chocolate milk. So,
oh, you mix it with chocolate milk?
Yeah, I get the Fairlife chocolate milk because I don't know, it's supposed to be better.
Yeah,
it's like omega 3s. So,
Man, how full do you feel after a protein shake with chocolate milk?
It is nice. I don't like some days after I come home for workout and it's like 4:30 and I ate like a late breakfast because, man, if I eat lunch now, I'm not going to eat dinner until 10. So it's just protein shake and then a good sized dinner.
Makes sense. So kind of going back to like after getting drafted, what, like, I guess, aside from knowing you're a pro player and, you know, like, you know, your attention to baseball, how did, like, was there any big changes just in your life that, like, I did not expect this with being a pro player?
I still like act like I'm a regular dude, just out and about, like stuff like that. Like even in baseball, like try to treat it the same as like when you're a little leaguer, like still trying to have fun. Nothing like changed too much. I mean, it's cool to get to play baseball now, paid to play baseball now. Cool to have like my own trading card. That was something I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, I was gonna say getting your card, like that sounds too.
A Bowman card. That's probably the coolest thing actually. Like growing up, like collecting other guys' cards and boom, now I have my own. Like that's pretty sweet.
Did you get sent like what was it, like 5,000 that you had to sign in a certain time?
The first round is like Bowman and Panini sent me stickers. And I was like, okay, this is sucky. So it was like 2,000 stickers each. And then Bowman out here sent me like 8 boxes of cards to sign. I was like, oh my God. It was cool. Like holding my own card in my hand, but sign, like all those signatures just took forever. Mm-hmm.
How long would you say like even just one box took?
Dude, I don't even know. The stickers were a lot faster because you just had like a sheet of them, but I don't know. I mean, it wasn't under an hour to get a whole box. they came with like 250 cards.
Jeez.
I guess around an hour a box or so, but like I wouldn't sit down and do them all at once. I'd like take out a section, sign those, go do something, come back, sign a different section. Just anything to like get my mind off the fact that I'm signing 2,000 cards.
And it's like the exact same one every time.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you got it.
Give me the details. Like, I want to know, like, you know, do they reach out to you? Hey, can we send you these? Or is it just like, here's your mail. And like, all of a sudden you have like a huge box, like the details through that.
Yeah. So my agent just contacted me like, hey, you got a card deal with Bowman and Panini, this is like what they're gonna offer you, this is how many cards it's for, like how long the deal goes, and when it's finalized and they have cards to send out, we're gonna send it to you. And so my agent's like, all right, and then I gave my address, and then whenever they're ready to send out, they sent me stickers at first, and then Bowman sent me some cards right before I shipped out to Arizona. But I mean, it wasn't too crazy. They're just the amount of cards they sent, I didn't expect at the time.
It was so like once they
2,500 deal, yeah.
Once they sent you the card, did you get to like keep any of them?
No, not at first. Panini actually just sent me like my first few to keep, but like until then it was just sign them all and return them. I mean, my mom has bought about every single card she finds on eBay of me, which is just like ridiculous. She has me signing cards for like family members and stuff. But other than that, like, I haven't really had any of myself until like literally yesterday that I got some shipped out from Panini.
But dang. So like Bowman had you sign like all those cards and it wasn't like, hey, I just keep 10 or whatever.
No, they didn't give me one to keep. It was sad. I was like holding them all in my hand. Like I asked my agent, like, hey, are any of these for me to keep? He was like, no, you got to return them all. I was like, oh, dang.
I want to know if they'd notice if you kept like one.
I don't know. They like had the specific amount like of cards that were in each box, like labeled and stuff. And like half the cards, like half of them were like numbered cards, like out of 99. And it was just, if I like messed up a signature on those, I was like worried that they were going to
come or something.
Come looking for me like, hey, you messed this up.
You try keeping one and they're going to request a refund for like $10 or something.
Yeah. They're just going to make me pay for all of them.
So, you know, with that, did you get a ton of people like trying to like send you stuff to get signed or messaging you for cards?
Yeah, hold on. You're spot on. You won't believe, like, I mean, this is like a few days worth of like
all these people.
Like, at first it was like a few people messaging me like, hey, I just packed your card, or like big Royals fan, so I found your card on eBay. I'm gonna go like send it to you. What's your address? And I was like, okay. Like people like were asking me like over Instagram and Twitter. I was like, okay, that's fine. Like here it is. And then I'm guessing like those people gave out address to other people, and now it's like four or five like every few days or so. And I shipped out a bunch yesterday. It's just they all try to be nice with like letters and stuff, but it's like it's a lot.
That's crazy. So is it kind of like one of those like, oh, I'll sit down like every other weekend and just knock it all out?
Yeah, it's just like whenever I look at the stack and get annoyed at how many is there, I'll go and sign a few more, send them out, and hopefully the people at the bottom don't get too mad that they're not getting their cards back, but just something I'll do every other day or so.
Man, with at least Bowman, you got paid for it.
Yeah, I'm going to request a dollar every card.
I mean, I feel like that wouldn't affect too many people, like, from sending.
That's fair. Just pull like, Johnny Manziel and just charge my autograph.
Man, if you're actually a Royals fan or whatever, like, it's a dollar. It's not that big of a deal. You probably paid that for the cards.
Yeah, true. I'll raffle off these extra cards.
So, I guess, yeah, I can't ask this minor league-wise because that's a typical question, but what's, like, your most, like, college, you know, experience in the sense of like, man, like this is a like not struggle, but you know what I mean, like, you know, a long 8-hour bus trip, or you know, a bus trip to where you pick up like Wendy's and everyone on the bus has Wendy's and like there's one bathroom.
Dude, you're talking about every bus trip for us. My roommate, well, before he was with my roommate, he was my roommate junior, so sophomore year, we were on a trip down to Virginia Military Institute, so VMI. I think it was our last weekend of the year. And we stopped at, he ate at three different Wendy's in three different states on the same day. Yeah.
And that's like your team?
Yeah. Yeah. We stopped at two Wendy's and then our hotel was next to up the hill from a gas station with the Wendy's. And so,
but like, was it one of those? Go ahead.
Yeah. I was about to say, like, every other trip for us, we didn't fly. So, like, our first three weekends last year were like over 8 hours, like Arkansas, Louisiana, Florida. And so we got used to it, but just not fun.
And a lot of people like, you know, assume, oh, it's D1. You got a lot of money. You're going to take private jets. Yeah. And it's like a lot of them don't even fly. And then a lot of them, you know, unless it's like the big like SEC and all that, but like a lot of them, if they do fly, it's just regular, like,
yeah,
5 a.m. flight.
Plane. Yeah. Yep.
So y'all didn't get any flights at all?
Nope, we drove everywhere. We went down to Florida, Louisiana, Alabama, Arkansas, Mississippi, just wherever we could. That's crazy. Like 10, 11, 12-hour trips. It was just, man, just not fun.
And so at least comparing it to my JUCO experience so far, was it, you know, you get off at Wendy's and it's like, hey, you got like $6.
Yeah, they would like give us our meal money before the weekend. And it was like, here's $20 for your entire weekend worth of meals. And people like you ended up going negative, like unless you had your parents there and they were buying every meal, but it was like some of the hotels wouldn't have breakfast. So you got to get breakfast on your own. And, or it's like, we're stopping at, you have a Wendy's, McDonald's or Arby's. It's just like, I don't want any of those. I had Wendy's yesterday and the week before, but man, I ate more Wendy's in the span of 3 years than I did like the 15 years before that.
Yeah, it's like, man, like, one, I had, like, Wendy's, and if not Wendy's, it was, like, Jack in the Box or something just like it.
Yeah.
And two, it's like, I'm about to, like, pitch in a big game. You know, I got scouts coming to see me. I'm not trying to, like, fuel up on Arby's.
you're spot on, man. It's just college baseball is sponsored by Wendy's at this point.
So to wrap up this with the last question, what is, like, your kind of, like, go-to, you know, you got a road trip coming up. What do you pick up to, like, bring for snacks or even, like, you know, besides just snacks and drinks, what do you, like, what do you have to have on, like, in your bag before you get on the bus?
So my junior year, I would get, so trail mix, it would be, like, a dried fruit, like, trail mix, like, coconut, like, cashews, stuff like that. And then started getting into almonds. I know nuts were really good for you, and so I started snacking on those instead of getting, like, unhealthy, like, chips or like candy or something, and then just a gallon of water, and then earpods and my phone. And I was just, oh, neck pillow. You gotta have a neck pillow.
Yes.
Other than that, just grinding out that 8 hours.
Did y'all's charter buses at least have the ones like where you can plug your phone charger in?
Every other seat had a charger, so everyone's like fighting over the seats with an outlet and laying on the floor like after you got an hour into the trip and everyone's like sprawled out across the seats. Just, I know you've probably seen that guy just asleep on the floor.
The guy's like laying in the aisle.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's the worst because like someone has to go to the bathroom. It's like you're either getting stepped on, the guy's getting kicked. Oh, yeah. Like,
yeah, like climb on top of the seats. Like, I can't count how many times I try to like climb over people. Just
different. It's a nightmare. Yeah. All right. Well, I wanted to thank you for coming on.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Of course. Make sure to head over to our YouTube channel at Mountain Talk Podcast to find our exclusive video with Will Klein called Gear Talk, where we talk about his gloves for this upcoming season. We also have Mountain Talk Podcast stickers available. Reach out to us on social media to figure out how to get yours. Thanks for tuning into this episode. And to find more on Will on Instagram, you can find him at WLLKLN. And to find more Mountain Talk Podcasts, you can search Mountain Talk Podcast.